Domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Whether you're in automotive, sporting goods, hardware, health, wellness, electrical, electronics, construction, carpet cleaning, legal, or animal care, and offer exceptional customer service and provide quality services or goods, you're honest, reliable, and professional. If you have a business, we have the customers. Let us put you in touch with our loyal, supportive, and dedicated listeners today. They're waiting to hear from you. It's inexpensive. It's effective. Call KHNC at 1-800-205-6245. Restore Health and Counseling salutes the men and women in uniform who've answered the call for our freedoms. Let's give them the hero's welcome they deserve as they have fought hard to restore peace. America's troops are our angels of protection, so stand up and salute them proudly. That's from Restore Health and Counseling at 4705 Paris Street, serving Northeast Denver with complete substance abuse counseling for adolescents to adult and for private as well as professional drug, alcohol screening and treatment and rehabilitation. Visit us at www.rhctherapy.com or call 303-373-1188.
Well, good morning. Dr. Stan here at the American Freedom Network, and our guest this morning is Lou Caverly. And hi, good morning, Lou. How are you?
Good morning, Dr. Stan. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I appreciate having you. Now, you've been doing a lot of research for a number of years on, and what have you found in your research?
Well, for one thing, I guess the overall conclusion would be, yes, there was a conspiracy in the death of John F. Kennedy, and it introduced a series of deaths over the period of the 1960s and early 70s that greatly influenced this nation, in effect almost a coup d'etat. And to begin with, we might look at some of the witnesses and some of the evidence that backs that up. One of the interesting little vignettes is that on the morning of the assassination, and of course the assassination took place in Dallas, a great many of our listeners are not old enough to remember that event, but in Dallas, Texas, the president and the vice president were both in a motorcade trying to get maximum exposure, trying to drum up votes and also patch up some conservative and left-wing splits in the Democratic Party in 1963. So the motorcade left Love Field, went through the outskirts of Dallas, down to Main Street, the main thoroughfare in the middle of Dallas. And the motorcade received a very warm welcome, in spite of the fact that Dallas had a reputation of being a right-wing city at the time. And as it came down, instead of going all the way on Main Street to the Stemmons Freeway, to where the president was to give a speech, they turned right onto Elm Street, supposedly to avoid a little 3-inch abutment that would have been a minor problem to drive over by the automobiles and the motorcade. So they took a right on Houston Street for one block, and then turned left into an area called Dealey Plaza, a park area that had a number of little decorations to make it prettied up. This was at the extreme western edge of Dallas. And as they turned down Elm Street and headed down toward an underpass that is referred to as the Triple Underpass, where three different streets converge, shots rang out. And that's the last thing people agree on, because to this day, there's a great deal of discrepancy as to where the shots came from. Now, to back up just a little bit, that morning, and I should say the assassination took place at 12:30 Dallas time, Central Standard Time, November 22nd, 1963. And that very morning, around 10 o'clock in the morning, a young lady was driving, and she saw that there was a car parked on this Elm Street extension, heading toward this underpass, and a man got out carrying what looked like a gun up what was later called the Grassy Knoll, really just a slight hill where the road went up to the railroad tracks that were passing over this underpass. Now, behind this Grassy Knoll, there was a fence, and behind that a parking area, which made it a perfect place where there may have been gunshots, that is, gunmen shooting at the president. No Secret Service was stationed up in that area, which is remarkable, because it would have been one of the obvious places to stage an attack on the president. And this young lady said she saw the man go up there, But the interesting thing is, and he may have just been carrying tools, it may have been nothing, and yet no place in the Warren Commission report that came out a year later was anything mentioned about Miss Mercer. And she did sign an affidavit, but she was never questioned by any representatives of the government, by the Secret Service, the FBI. No one questioned her about that. At the time of the assassination, we have a lot of witnesses who said shots came from two different places. The established government story, of course, is that the shots came from the Texas School Book Depository, a tall brick building. I think it was 8 stories tall at the corner of Elm and Houston Streets. And the government report says that Lee Harvey Oswald, a young man who was employed there, fired all the shots. They say that it was 3 shots that hit Governor Connally, the governor of Texas, who was seated in the directly in front of the president in the presidential limousine. It wounded the president once in a non-fatal wound in the neck, and then, of course, it was a fatal headshot that killed the president. Now, Lee Bowers was a gentleman. He was a railroad tower man for the Union Terminal Company, and his 14-foot tower was behind this fence or the grassy knoll. And Bowers was questioned by the police, and he testified that he saw 2 men standing near the fence just before the shots were fired. He said one was middle-aged, fairly heavy-set, the other about mid-20s, neither a plaid shirt or plaid coat or jacket. Now, at the moment the shot went off, the first shot, Bowers said he saw something that caught his eye. And these are his exact words. At the time of the shooting, in the vicinity of where the 2 men I've described were, there was a flash of light, or as far as I am concerned, something I could not identify. But there was something which occurred which caught my eye in this immediate area on the embankment. I could not identify it other than that was some unusual occurrence, a flash of light or smoke, or something which caused me to feel like something out of the ordinary had occurred there. Just to give a couple, and there are many, many, many witnesses, so time doesn't permit us to give very many, but to give a couple more. A man named J.C. Price was across the Dealey Plaza watching the motorcade from the roof of the Terminal Annex building. In an affidavit he gave the Dallas Sheriff's Office, very soon after the assassination, Price said he heard a volley of shots, and his eye was attracted to the area behind the fence in the grassy knoll. And here's an exact quote from J.C. Price. I saw one man run toward the passenger cars on the railroad siding after the volley of shots, he stated. The man was about 25 years old and wore khaki trousers. Price said the man fleeing from the assassination scene, quote, had something in his hand, unquote. And although he had signed an affidavit giving important information, Price was not questioned by the Warren Commission or by their counsel, and no reference to his observations appears in the report, not even his name. And then there was S.M. Holland, who had been an employee of the Union Terminal Company for 25 years. He was on the bridge, that is the so-called triple underpass, where the 3 roads go over underneath the railroad tracks. And being an employee of the railroad companies, he was up in the bridge, and he had a good eye on the motorcade as it came down Elm Street, heading directly toward him. He heard, of course, the shots, and he immediately looked to his left toward the wooden fence in the grassy knoll area and the bushes, and here's a quote from S.M. Holland. And a puff of smoke came out about 6 or 8 feet above the ground, right out from under those trees. He said he heard 4 shots and had, quote, no doubt about seeing that puff of smoke come out from under the trees. So those are a few of the eyewitnesses, just a very few of many, many. In fact, the great majority of witnesses said the shots were coming from the grassy knoll and not from the Texas.
And of course, the purpose of the Warren Commission was not to reveal, but to conceal the truth. We'll be back
exactly right.
In just a moment. Beverly, right here, the American Investment.
Freedom, freedom goes away.
Hi, I'm Bruce Baker. I write songs that give people with conservative values a laugh, or maybe bring a tear to their eye. Hopefully, the songs will help people with liberal values to see the light of liberty. Please visit my website at www.myspace.com/Bruce-Baker. You can hear full versions of several songs and see my video. There are links to download either iTunes or MP3 versions of the tunes on my new album, Mark's Larks. That's www.myspace.com/Bruce-Baker.
At RAM, we don't think it's the calendar's job to say when the work is done. We think it's up to the truck. So while the other guys are shutting down for the holidays, RAM trucks are firing up their available 390 horsepower Hemi V8 and Cummins turbo diesel engines and working overtime. This is a great time to get a great deal on a great truck. Right now, at the RAM Big Finish event.
Now get 0% financing for 60 months or $7,200 in total values on the 2012 Ram 1500 Bighorn Crew Cab 4x4. Values include $3,200 Bighorn package discount and $4,000 cash allowance. Package values based on combined value of individual package items. 0% APR financing for 60 months equals $1,667 per month for $1,000. Finance for well-qualified buyers through Ally regardless of down payment. Residency restrictions apply. Offers end 12-3.
And so Luke Haverly is talking about the assassination of John Kennedy. This was a coup d'etat, ladies and gentlemen. And you must understand that the fact that the murderers have been able to get off all this time, certainly nobody else has ever been indicted for the murder. There's no question at all that this was planned by the people at the highest levels of our government, including President Johnson, and we have sources of other information, people who were very close to Johnson, where he, for all intents and purposes, admitted there was a conspiracy and they were going to kill President Kennedy. But, of course, the media controls what the American people think, and there have been many murders since that time that have been covered up. Certainly, the mass murder on September 11th, 2001, was covered up. The bringing down of the Twin Towers was simply an incident so they could get us into a war with Afghanistan and ultimately with Iraq. It was all staged, ladies and gentlemen, but of course the prototype of this was the cover-up of the assassination of President Kennedy. And if they had the power to conceal mass murder here in the United States, why, what else do they have in store for us? Go right ahead, Lou.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I'll mention one other witness because it's such an interesting one, then we'll move on to some other topics. There was one young man named Gordon Arnold who was on leave from the military, and he had just gone through what they called an infiltration course, where he had to crawl along the ground with bullets whizzing over his head. So he knew all about what bullets sounded like, and he knew what to do. Flattened himself in the ground and just stayed there till the shooting stopped. Now, Arnold was home on leave, and he thought, well, this would be a great time to get some pictures I'll remember for the rest of my life. So he had a camera with him, and he wanted to go up to the top of this grassy knoll, or maybe even get on the railroad bridge, where there would have been a beautiful view of the presidential motorcade. But he met a man in a civilian suit wearing his sidearm, and that man told him no one was allowed up there. And at first, Arnold challenged the man's authority. But the man pulled out an identification badge and said, I'm with the Secret Service. And so Arnold seemed to think that was pretty logical. So he retreated back down and stationed himself just in front of the stockade fence at the top of the grassy knoll. And he was about 3 feet in front of the fence. And he began filming the motorcade. And then the shots rang out, and he said he felt the first shot nearly graze his left ear, and he quoted the quote him, he says, I thought they were shooting at me. You don't really hear the whiz of a bullet, you feel it. You feel something go by, and then you hear a report just behind it. I automatically hit the ground. If I could have dug a hole and crawled in, I would have, because there was more than one shot fired. It was just like a crack, just like I was standing there under the muzzle. One shot went past my ear, and the other went over me. And Arnold, a police officer that he met soon after, once the shots stopped, took his film and Arnold never saw it again. Arnold went back into the military. He was only on leave for a couple days. 2 days later, he was at the report for military duty in Alaska, and his story never came out for many, many years until the mid-70s. And finally, someone tracked him down, and he reluctantly offered to put his story in a Dallas newspaper, provided they didn't give his name. But somehow his name did get out. So this man was not seeking publicity, and he was a trained military man. Now, I should mention, I don't know if I really made this quite clear, the fact that these shots are coming from the grassy knoll is automatically indicative of a conspiracy, because we know shots were definitely fired from behind as well. And the grassy knoll was in front and to the right of the motorcade. So the minute you get the shots from the grassy knoll, you definitely have more than two people firing. And, of course, the question is, how big a conspiracy was it? Was it just a couple of fanatics, or was there much more to it? And so now we come to some of the greater mysteries of the whole assassination scene. One of them is the fact that three so-called tramps were found and arrested in a railroad car, some sort of boxcar, very soon after the assassination took place. The police found them holed up in this boxcar and took them into custody temporarily. But the interesting thing is the tramps don't look like tramps. Their clothes are good, their shoes are good, they're a little not clean-shaven, but otherwise they look like pretty well-to-do people. And when they were taken into the police office, police headquarters, and not far away in downtown Dallas, they were questioned and released with no records kept, the names were never kept, no testimony was kept from them, and they were just let go as if they had never existed. And it wasn't until a number of years later that I believe Dick Gregory revealed this in a television show. And there are photographs of them, and several different people have tried to figure out who they were. And I won't go into all the details right now. I don't have all the names right in front of me, but there were various guesses as to who these so-called tramps were and whether they had anything to do with the assassination. Now, Lee Harvey Oswald, that's an entire topic in and of itself that we could spend hours and hours on.
Well, could I just comment that many people felt that one of the tramps was E. Howard Hunt, and apparently before he died, he told his sons that he was one of the tramps, he was one of the people on the grassy knoll. So I don't think there's any question at all that these were government agents, but go ahead.
Yes, and of course E. Howard Hunt, a few years later, was caught up in the whole Watergate scandal, and before the assassination, he had been deeply involved in the Bay of Pigs, where the Cubans who opposed Castro were trying to overthrow Castro, but that ended up in a debacle. And a lot of the Cubans blamed Kennedy for that, which introduces one of the theories of who might have been responsible or who might have had some part in the assassination. But as for Lee Harvey Oswald, the Warren Commission said, oh, he's just a disgruntled person, a nutcase, acting alone, who shot the president. But when we examine his life, we find a great deal more than just what we get in the Warren Commission. And they did, of course, give some of the details. The Warren Commission's report is a great, big, thick book of 800 or more pages. But they failed to tell a lot of the background of Oswald in concerning things like organized crime and concerning intelligence connections. Oswald was born in New Orleans, went into the Marines, didn't do too well in school, so he quit school and went into the Marines as soon as he was of age. Then, as soon as he got out of the Marines, he defected to Russia. And there are many mysteries connected with that. He got a boat to go over to London. Then he got a flight to Helsinki, Finland, from which he went to Russia. But there are no records of any public planes, ordinary planes. So the question has always been raised, how did he get to Helsinki? At the date and time he would have gone there, there are no ordinary airlines flights listed. And then he wanted to give up his passport. In fact, I think he did give up his passport. He wanted to renounce his U.S. citizenship, but according to the best records we have, he never did actually get around to doing that. Some indications are he applied for Russian citizenship, and some say he did not. He got a lot of financial aid while he was in the Soviet Union. He was there 2.5 to 3 years, met a young woman that he married, and then he decided he wanted to come back to the USA. Now, there were several other defectors at about the same time, and they all kind of seem like they may have been false defectors, people that were just wrapped up with intelligence. So Oswald's, in spite of the fact that he said he would give up vital secrets to the Russians, including having worked at a base that serviced the U-2 spy plane for the U.S. while he was in the Marines in Atsugi, Japan, Oswald had no trouble at all leaving the Soviet Union and coming back to the USA.
My understanding is our government paid his way back. Is there any truth to that?
I think there is, yes. I believe the government did give him a significant help with the finances. Then when he got back, he was met by a lot of Russian expatriates who were anti-communist. And Oswald had always said he was pro-communist. And later in that same year, he was passing out leaflets for the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, which was an organization in favor of Castro, saying the U.S. should support Castro. However, there are many mysteries involved with that. That would seem to indicate on the surface that Oswald was still in favor of communism in spite of being disenchanted with the Soviet Union. But one of the places he used as an office supposedly was a building where there were Guy Bannister, former FBI officer, who was violently anti-communist. So there seem to be many contradictions there. So we don't know what to make of Oswald. He certainly wasn't the kind of down-on-his-luck man that the Warren Commission portrayed him as being. He was quite capable of negotiating all these trips to the Soviet Union and back. He, at one point, went to Mexico City, supposedly. Now, there are people who say it wasn't really Oswald, because all of a sudden there seemed to be someone who was impersonating Oswald, so-called second Oswald, or a false Oswald. And to this day, it's very hard to sort out if that's true, and if it is true, who was the real Oswald? And this one famous incident with a woman by the name of Sylvia Odio in Dallas, which by the time of a few months before the assassination, Oswald had moved around quite a bit from Fort Worth, but finally ended up in Dallas. And Sylvia Odio, who was a very dependable kind of person, very reliable witness, said that on the night of late September or early October of 1963, so about 6 weeks before the assassination, three men came to her home, and they claimed that they were in favor of overthrowing Castro. Now, Sylvia Odio's parents were in jail for opposing Castro in Cuba. They were still in a Cuban jail in the Isle of Pines. So they thought that Sylvia would be a good person to connect with if they were telling the truth. But the interesting thing is not so much that they came to her to try and get help, and she decided it was too risky with her parents in jail, so she kind of brushed them off. But the next night, one of them called up, one named, I believe, Leopoldo, that was his stage name at least, and said that the third man, who was, they called Leon Oswald, not Lee, but Leon Oswald, they said he's kind of loco, and he'd be a good man to shoot Castro. In fact, they said this man, Leon Oswald, thought that President Kennedy ought to be shot because he didn't take action against Castro. He didn't support the invaders in the Bay of Pigs invasion. So there we're faced with a puzzle. Was this the real Oswald, or were they trying to implicate Oswald? The man, Leon Oswald, never said this himself, of course. This other man phoned Miss Odio and claimed that this Leon Oswald wanted to shoot the president, or at the very least shoot Castro and possibly the president, too. So you see, were they trying to implicate the real Oswald? Were they setting up a patsy? Certainly sounds like that. Although some authors say, yes, this was the real Oswald, and he was involved in an ongoing conspiracy. But this is just one of several things where there seemed to be foreknowledge of the assassination. And Miss Odio was... The interesting thing about Miss Odio is she told this to people before the assassination. She wrote to her father. She told her psychiatrist before the assassination all about this. So this is not something that was added in as an afterthought that she might have made up or had delusions about once the assassination had taken place. This indicates definite foreknowledge of something going on. Maybe not a definite assassination, but at least something mysterious. Especially when you pin that name, Leon Oswald. That's just too much of a coincidence. Now, going on with some other things. As I said, when Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Marines, he was a radar operator on the U-2 spy plane. And another interesting fact is that soon after Oswald defected, the Russians were finally able to shoot down one of the U-2s, Francis Gary Powers, a U.S. pilot who survived the crash, bailed out, and was later exchanged for a Russian prisoner the U.S. had in custody. But was that a real tip-off that Oswald gave to the Russians how to shoot down the plane? Because it flew at an astonishing height of something like 90,000 feet, far, far above any ordinary airline. So it seems to be that those may be connected. Maybe Oswald did give them some information. Or maybe the whole thing was a setup. It's very hard to tell at this late date.
But hold on there. We'll be back in just a moment with Lou Caverly. But there is so much information out there, it's designed to confuse us, ladies and gentlemen. Somebody's done a tremendous job playing games with our minds. We'll be back in a moment here at the American Freedom Network.
Try Property Management, and Greeley urges listeners, make this the year you get involved in the community. Whether it's food for a family in crisis, checking in on a senior, care packages for military members, or giving the gift of life by giving blood, you can make a difference and directly affect someone's life. We can't save the whole world, but every little bit helps. This message has been from Tri Property Management in Greeley, where Neil and staff are on the air saying happy holiday season to all. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of the light. That was the true light which gives light to every man coming into the world. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 6 through 9.
If the IRS has turned your life upside down, Ameristar Tax Centers has a free, no-obligation consultation just for you. With proven experience, our former IRS agents are licensed to contact the IRS immediately for you, stop the collection activity, and get you instant help to relieve you from this burden. We guarantee not to charge you a penny unless we can help. So call for free information now.
800-519-6297. 800-519-6297. 800-519-6297.
The name is Patriot Trading Group, and the website is allamericangold.com. I'm Joe Jaquin, Vice President of the Patriot Trading Group, and we handle American gold for the American people because that's who we are and that's who we care about. So if you want your portfolio to help you get the job done, or if you want your IRA to be safe from Wall Street and the paper markets and your kids' future to be protected, then call us, the Patriot Trading Group, at 800-951-0592. You'll be glad you did.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat and Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath. Sentus, the uniform people in Greeley, ask everyone to get involved in our community this holiday season. Whether it's food for a family in crisis, a toy for a needy child, care packages for military members, or giving the gift of life by giving blood, you can make a difference and directly affect someone's life. Be part of something great. This message from Sentus, the uniform people in Greeley, named one of the most admired outsourcing companies in America. Call 970-352-2233, 970-352-2233.
Well, good morning. Dr. Stan here at the American Freedom Network. Our guest this morning, Lou Caverly, and Lou has his own radio program. Lou, would you like to tell our listeners how they could get onto your website or listen to your radio program?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Stan. The website is thedividedkingdom.org. thedividedkingdom.org. And you can hear the program on the Internet by going to WWCR.com and click on Transmitter 3, and it's on 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday nights. 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 30 nights. And again, that's WWCR.com. And just click on Transmitter 3. You can hear it on shortwave, same time, 8 p.m. Thursday, 4.840 megahertz. And that, again, is Eastern Time, 8 p.m., 4.840. Well, thank you, Dr. Stan.
Okay, that's Worldwide Christian Radio, WWCR, excellent shortwave outlet. And you go right ahead with the story, Lou.
All right.
And so the American people must understand that we have an invisible government. We have a visible government. We have an invisible government that kills without discretion, whether it's killing a president or the president's brother or certainly Martin Luther King or certainly people are killed. A number of people who've been on my radio program have died under very mysterious circumstances, and I've always believed that they were simply assassinated. This is the sort of thing that goes on in the world today. But go right ahead, Lou. You're going into the background of the murder of an American president, which has been covered up by a number of books written. I mean, I probably have 30 books written on this subject. About 10 of them or 15 of them are written by ex-government employees. Now, when you work for the government, you don't write a book without the government's permission, and those books all have conflicting stories, all aimed at creating confusion. You get so many stories, each one claiming to be accurate, written by somebody who works for the government, who knows what happens. Ladies and gentlemen, they play games with our minds. They do it. They did it with the assassination of President Kennedy, and they're doing it today. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, now, let's look at Oswald after the assassination. He may have done it, he may not have done it. But what happened? Well, he left the school book depository. There's dispute as to the exact time he left. Somehow he got back to a boarding house on the south side of Dallas, a region called Oak Cliff. And then a policeman stopped him. And that's one of the great mysteries of why this officer Tippett stopped Oswald. And I'm reading just a little selection from a book called Crime of the Century by Michael Kurtz. And he says, it's difficult to accept the Warren Commission's claim that Tippett stopped Oswald because Oswald fitted the description of the suspect in the Kennedy assassination. That description was so general that it could have described thousands of individuals. Since Tippett had only a view of Oswald's rear, one wonders how he could have matched him with the suspect. Furthermore, if Tippett really suspected Oswald, he almost surely would have drawn his revolver against such a dangerous suspect. Yet according to the commission's star eyewitness, Helen Markham, Tippett not only made no attempt to make the arrest of a lifetime, he emerged him in a friendly conversation. Neither the Warren Commission nor the House Select Committee on Assassinations tried to explore the unusual circumstances surrounding Tippett's presence in the area. Almost every other police officer in Dallas was ordered to proceed to Dealey Plaza, Parkland Hospital, or Love Field Airport. Tippett alone received instructions to remain where he was in the residential Oak Cliff section, where no suspicion of criminal activity had been raised. The police dispatcher also ordered Tippett to, quote, be at large for any emergency that comes in, unquote. Most unusual instruction, since the primary duty of all policemen is to be at large for emergencies. And Oak Cliff was a little residential area where there was unlikely to be any kind of emergency. So that's one of the mysteries. Why did Tippett stop Oswald? And of course, Oswald is alleged to have killed Tippett as Tippett was coming around the front of the police cruiser. Oswald, according to some witnesses, opened fire and killed Tippett. Now, you have to get the feeling there was something there more than just a policeman stopping a man. There's a lot of testimony that they knew each other, although the Warren Commission would never accept that. And then we come to Jack Ruby, one of the curious people involved with the assassination. I believe that the first murder to be shown live on TV was 2 days after the assassination when Ruby shot Oswald. Now, Oswald was supposed to have been transferred sometime around 10 or 10:30 in the morning, allegedly to get him out of the Dallas jail, where he'd been perfectly safe, so that they could put him in the Dallas Sheriff's Office, which was supposed to be safer still. and there had been some threats against Oswald's life, which would not be unusual, since he was blamed for shooting the president. Jack Ruby was a, according to the Warren Commission, a small-time hoodlum, operated a strip club in Dallas, grew up in Chicago, moved to Dallas, and was just a small-time operator. They portrayed him as sort of a little bit goofy guy, always friends with the police, always giving them free services, free food and so forth at his club. But the day of the killing of Oswald, they postponed the transfer of Oswald from the city to the county jail by about an hour. Jack Ruby just happened to come on the scene at exactly the right time and opened up. There's a very famous picture, actually a movie, taken by newsmen, because there were many, many newsmen in the basement of the jail at that time, that shows Ruby lunging forward and shooting Oswald just once, but just in the place that would kill him, in the abdomen. And Oswald died at the same hospital that Kennedy died at, almost 24 hours, I should say 48 hours later. The thing about Jack Ruby, though, is Jack Ruby was not just a small-time operator. He had connections with Carlos Marcello in New Orleans, the head of the whole southern area, the mafia in this country, and a man whom Robert Kennedy had infuriated by deporting. They picked up Marcello one day, I think in 1961, could have been 62, and flew him down to Guatemala and dumped him there. And so Marcello had a real vendetta against Robert Kennedy, and at least one occasion said, "We're going to get that little son of a gun," in words that I wouldn't repeat on the radio. But the question has always remained, how did Ruby get into the basement of the jail? Now, he was good friends with the police. The Warren Commission said he just walked down the ramp that the truck that would take Oswald to the county jail was using. All he did was get past when the policeman wasn't looking, get on the ramp. But a number of witnesses, including pretty dependable police, said, no, there's no way he could have done that. And at least one witness said he rode down the elevator from the interior of the police building. In other words, the police helped him out. And most authors think now that Ruby probably was told by these higher-ups in the mafia, we better get rid of this Oswald character. He knows too much, and it's your job to get rid of him. Jack Ruby was seen the very night of the assassination in the police building at one of the press conferences they held with Oswald present. Things were very loose in the police building. They brought Oswald out several times to show him to the press corps. And Ruby apparently didn't have a good shot that time. Too many people around. But when the time came to do the job, he did it. And as I said, just one shot was all he needed to finish off Oswald.
Yes, but the question is, why did Ruby do that? We knew he'd be shot. Why did Ruby shoot Oswald? And why did they have to silence Oswald? Did Oswald shoot the president? I don't think so. We'll be back in a moment. The fact that this has all been designed to confuse the American people to cover up assassination.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots, biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath.
Are you prepared for the coming chaos? Whether you are planning a strategic retreat or you have one in progress, Square Root Construction would be pleased to offer our assistance. With nearly 30 years of construction experience, Square Root Construction can help with design, engineering, and permitting issues, as well as a host of general contracting services from foundation to finish work. For a limited time, we are offering exclusive discounts to the listeners of Randy's program. For a no-obligation consultation, please call Doug at 303-517-8742 or drop an email to strategicretreats@gmail.com.
The name is Patriot Trading Group, and the website is allamericangold.com. I'm Joe Jaquin, Vice President of the Patriot Trading Group, and we handle American gold for the American people because that's who we are and that's who we care about. So if you want your portfolio to help you get the job done, or if you want your IRA to be safe from Wall Street and the paper markets and your kids' future to be protected, then call us, the Patriot Trading Group, at 800-951-0592. You'll be glad you did.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Freedom Network, but the question is, Lou, why was this whole thing staged? What part did Lee Harvey Oswald play? Did he play any part? Was he simply a patsy? And why did they kill President Kennedy?
Well, that of course, is the main question. There were a lot of people that would have liked to have seen Kennedy dead. There were several key figures in the mafia, for example. Santo Trafficante in Miami. He was overheard. Actually, I think he was taped. As saying, we got to get to those Kennedys. And if we get to the John Kennedy, then Robert Kennedy, who was actually pursuing this anti-gangland vendetta, Robert Kennedy would become powerless because they knew that Lyndon Johnson wouldn't pursue it with the fervor that John Kennedy did. In fact, there are rumors that Johnson was deeply involved with the underworld. And then again, Johnson himself, Lyndon Johnson, his mistress said that he was involved with this assassination. And I think you've had her on your program, Madeline Brown. Is that right, Dr. Stan?
Yes, I did. Madeline,
yes.
Mary Brown, go ahead.
Yes, she certainly implicated Lyndon Johnson. And Lyndon Johnson was getting older. He didn't think much of the Kennedys, although he accepted the vice presidential nomination after trying to become the presidential nominee in 1960, but was beaten out by Kennedy in the primaries. So Johnson is another one. And then there were elements of the CIA. After the Bay of Pigs invasion, Kennedy blamed the CIA for not informing him fully and felt that the CIA had become a kind of a rogue organization. So he fired Alan Dulles. He fired Charles Cabell, who by coincidence was the mayor of Dallas's brother, and some other persons. And then at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, he made some deals with Khrushchev. In order to get the missiles out, Kennedy said he would give a pledge not to invade Cuba. So a lot of the Cuban exiles who wanted Castro out so they could go back were furious with Kennedy. Also, the mafia had a lot of dealings, a lot of good casinos and money-making operations in Cuba that Castro had stopped or nationalized, taken over. So they were left out in the cold. So there were all these different facets of people in and out of the government that wanted to kill Kennedy. Now, one of the interesting things is that the CIA and the mafia had already teamed up several times in World War II. The CIA had, or its predecessor, the OSS, had used the mafia to try to reduce sabotage. And during the early 60s, the CIA recruited several mafia figures to try to assassinate Castro in what was called Project Mongoose. And once again, all these things seem to tie together. So we have this strange conglomeration of people who wanted Kennedy dead. They just teamed up, and as far as we can tell, many of them may have been present at the assassination. There was one, Joseph Miltier, for example, who was taped in Miami a few weeks before the actual assassination, saying Kennedy would be killed. And the rumor has it that the police actually rerouted the presidential motorcade in Miami to avoid having any incident. And yet nothing like that happened in Dallas. They just let the motorcade go on as if they had had no information about a possible assassination. Also, there's the story that President Kennedy wanted to get the U.S. to print its own money other than Federal Reserve notes. And I think Craig Roberts tells about that in his book Killzone, that the president wanted to print genuine U.S. notes apart from the Federal Reserve notes we always use today. And that would have aroused a lot of opposition among the New World Order types that did not want this. Whether it was president or not, they did not want this kind of independence for the USA. So you see, we have all these different threads. Who really did it? I suspect more than one group did it in a combination. And then they covered it up with all the mysterious deaths that you talked about. You were saying, Dr. Stan, there were mysterious deaths about some of the people that were on your program. I hope I'm not going to be one of them, of course.
And there is a book actually written by Paul about Craig Roberts. It was called The Missing Witnesses. There are over 100 people who actually witnessed the assassination of President Kennedy, who mysteriously died in the months that followed. Could it happen simply by accident?
No, it doesn't seem that way. One of Jack Ruby's lawyers, Tom Howard, died very soon after. Jim Cody, I think his name is pronounced, was killed, and the interesting thing was killed by a karate chop to the neck, just as he had stepped out from the shower. And Dorothy Kilgallen, famous, very famous person because she was on TV, and I think it's What's My Line was the TV show. Anyway, one of the early quiz shows in the early 60s, late 50s, and she was a newspaper reporter, and she had said that she was going to break the case wide open. That is the Kennedy assassination case, right after she had a 30-minute interview with Jack Ruby. Now, soon after that, she was found dead of supposedly an overdose of barbiturates. Whether that really killed her or not is anybody's guess. But whatever she found out went to her grave. She went with it to her grave. Nobody ever found out just what Dorothy Kilgallen knew. Oh, there were many, many. Ron Reynolds. He had seen a man running from the scene of the Tippit shooting, gun in hand, and it was not Oswald. 2 days after he was interviewed by the FBI, Reynolds was shot in the back of the head. And on and on and on. As you say, that's a book I don't have by Craig Roberts, but I'd love to get it if it's still available. And there were many, many witnesses. Some were automobile accidents. Some were heart attacks. So they didn't seem quite so obvious, although they might have been, you know, covered-up deaths. There was one of Ruby's strippers who claimed that he knew Oswald and that they were often seen together. And in September, and I believe that was 1966, she was shot to death a month after a marriage, just to name a few. So they did a good job of trying to eliminate the witnesses, that's for sure.
Yes, they certainly did. Well, anyway, we're just about out of time. A parting thought before we let you go.
Well, I think that the biggest thing the government could do, if they would only do it, is to release all the documents they have. They've released a lot of them. All the documents pertaining to the assassination, and give good copies that where things are not highly crossed out.
They can't let the American people know the truth. God bless. Thanks so much, Lou.
Thank Bye-bye. You so much, Dr. Stan.
At RAM, we don't think it's the calendar's job to say when the work is done. We think it's up to the truck. So while the other guys are shutting down for the holidays, RAM trucks are firing up their available 390-horsepower Hemi V8 and Cummins turbo diesel engines and working overtime. This is a great time to get a great deal on a great truck. Right now, at the RAM Big Finish event.
Now get 0% financing for 60 months or $7,200 in total values on the 2012 Ram 1500 Bighorn Crew Cab 4x4. Values include $3,200 Bighorn package discount and $4,000 cash allowance. Package values based on combined value of individual package items. 0% APR financing for 60 months equals $1,667 per month for $1,000. Finance for well-qualified buyers through Ally regardless of down payment. Residency restrictions apply. Offers end 12/3.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of the Green Herb.
The people who are controlling the government of America are the same people who are trying to control your family's health care. You can sit quietly by and accept their plan, or you can take responsibility for your health. What would happen if you could no longer obtain the medications you're now taking? Would you be forced to join the ranks of corrupt agents just to purchase the medicine? If you're one of the thousands of concerned citizens who would like to know more about a natural way, God's way to help, drop by the Green Herb for a natural solution and all the information you need to make an intelligent decision. Or go to our website, www.thegreenherb.com. Come by the Green Herb, located in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB. That's 888-765-4372. And be sure to listen to the Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
Well, Dr. Stan here at the American Freedom Network, and I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Lou this morning. Basically, we have 2-4 tape sets on the assassination. One of them, of course, is an interview with, of all people, Lee Harvey Oswald. You've never heard anything like it. We have several other people who investigated the background of the assassination of President Kennedy. The second tape set is actually an interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, 2 hours. He was the Pentagon liaison to the CIA. And then, of course, a 2-hour interview with Lyndon Johnson's mistress. Fascinating information you won't hear elsewhere. Both of those tape sets are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Bob Fletcher put together an excellent DVD on the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And then we have a book written by Craig Roberts, The Missing of Witnesses. A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza. His other book, Missing Witnesses, is out of print, but we do have The Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza. So you need to get the book, the DVD, and the 2-4 tape sets, and there's no question why this was a government cover-up. But it wasn't really a government. It was an invisible government out there, ladies and gentlemen, that controls America. Then, of course, we have a 4-CD set on the murder of Bobby Kennedy, a book on the murder of Bobby Kennedy, and two DVDs and a DVD on the murder of Bobby Kennedy. We have a book on the murder of Martin Luther King, written by Mr. Pepper, who was hired by the King family to get to the truth, and actually was the attorney at the trial, where, of course, they sued one of the men who had been part and parcel of the assassination to kill Martin Luther King, and with the 4-CD set, you'll hear my interviews with the people who were involved in that, with Mr. Pepper, and there's no question at all, they killed Martin Luther King, but they kill people all the time. And if you aren't concerned about that, if you just think you can go through life, just living your life and forgetting about the evil that's going on, why, of course, you're mistaken, because we're coming to a climax in history. These people are intent upon destroying this country, impoverishing our people, and plunging us into another terrible war with the Muslim world. You need to get our 2-4 tape sets, our DVD, and our book on the murder of JFK, the books, DVDs on the murder of Bobby Kennedy, the book and the 4-CD set on the murder of Martin Luther King. They killed them all, ladies and gentlemen, and they have such a degree of control over the media that they've been able to escape. They also killed the almost 3,000 people in the planes and then the World Trade Center and the other buildings that were destroyed on September 11th, 2001. You need to get that information. It's all available from Radio Liberty. We have tape sets, 9/11 update. Why did the buildings come down? All tape and CD sets. And you need to understand the murderers are on the loose. And if they think nothing of killing 3,000 Americans that day, or almost 3,000 Americans, do you think they're going to be concerned about the millions of Americans who died during the coming war. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, the war is coming. That's why we're toppling all those governments over there in the Near East and the Middle East in preparation for a coming war with the Muslim world. Just as we staged the whole war with Germany during World War II, and you need to get the book, America's Nazi Secret, written by a fellow with a telephone number, 1-800-544-8897. 1-800-544-8897. For the file, Lloyd Dewey.
Now you can reach the American Freedom Network at our new P.O. Box, 1750 Johnstown, Colorado, 80534, or online at AmeriFree.com.
Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone into the world. By this you will know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Yeshua, Jesus, has come in the flesh is of God, and every spirit that does not confess that Yeshua, Jesus, has come in the flesh is not of God. And this is the spirit of Antichrist, which you have already heard was coming and is now already in the world. 1 John 4:1.
No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque or reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything